Morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I love that you're here with us today. It's going to be a good one. Tim's here. Where else would he be?
Hello, John. Thank you for having me. Thanks for bringing
me back. The delayed hello. You got to be energetic, Tim.
I didn't know you were done talking.
No.
Set me up again. Do it again.
No, we're not doing it again, but thank you for joining us, everybody. It's going to be a good one. It's a nice Monday morning here. What is it? 22 degrees in northern Michigan. We had the rink going yesterday at church. We were skating outside. It was fantastic. It was beautiful. I love this time of year when it's cold and it's sunny. It's fantastic. Couldn't be better. And you know what else is couldn't be better is when you get to review a good hockey fight. I'm talking an old school, let's grab each other's collars and like throw until our arms get tired, until someone gets knocked out. Isn't that fun, Tim, to just relive those great times of those old school fights like Larry Robinson, Semenko, McSorley, these types of Grimsons, the Proberts? Isn't that great?
It's the best. It's the best.
Well, I got a good one for you. Ryan Reeves. Maybe the toughest guy in the NHL, one of, if not the, and a young up-and-coming kid. I'm going to butcher his name because it's something different. Bukanji Imama. They had a heck of a fight, Tim, yesterday. Did you see this one? Because it's going to go down in the record books.
Well, as you know, I don't like violence, so I was very, very cautious.
So you probably loved it.
Yeah. Okay, well, why are we talking about this fight? What happened?
Well, there's a lot of things, and everybody's talking about it because it was arguably one of the worst fights ever in the history of the NHL. There was that one fight that never happened. I don't know who the two combatants were, where they squared off, and finally the refs jumped in between them. It was like, enough is enough.
Right.
This one, they actually engaged, and nobody threw a punch. Not that landed. Imama tried to throw two. Maybe one or two, nothing landed, swing and a miss. He falls. Ryan Reeves grabs him. And that was it. Now, here's the interesting thing that I want to hear from you. Before we came on the air, we were talking about this fight. And you said it was embarrassing for Imama. Why do you think it's embarrassing for him? Because I think it's the opposite. I think it's embarrassing for Reeves.
Well,
it's hard for me to say because he's a friend of the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not great for either of them because they do kind of just this. It's like that fight you mentioned. They square off and they square off and they sort of set and then they reset and square off again. But if there's one of them that I thought looked worse, it was Imama, because he's the one who throws that big punch, misses and stumbles over. And that's when the fight ends. And then Reeves starts laughing, sort of laughing at him, presumably. So I took it away as Imama looked like an idiot and Reeves just didn't take it too seriously. That's how I felt.
There's a lot of layers to this and I hate them all. The first one is, okay, Reeves buries the Coyotes defenseman, a fantastic hit, like through the boards. Like it was great, a heavy hit. You could feel it. Imama comes off the bench. If you're going to fight, you have to grab him and fight. You don't go up and tap him and then skate out to the center dot. I never understood this. In my eyes, you're making this all about you. And this is a big thing in that LNAH league that we talked about last week, the Quebec Fighting League, the seniors. The game is all about the fights. Who cares about the scores? The fans go there for the fights, and the fighters know that, and they make a big show of it. They go to the center ice. They're doing their little dance. They're getting pumped up. And by the time they engaged, 30 seconds has gone by. This reeks of that, and I hate it. Anytime you make yourself or the fight bigger than the game, it bothers me. So Imama taps him, and he's skating backwards to the center ice dot. He's throwing his elbow pads off. It's just, it's too much for me. But anyways, all that aside, he's doing it. And so I'm getting excited. I'm like, okay, I don't know anything about this Imama kid. He obviously is tough. He's challenging Ryan Reeves. They're squaring off. Reeves looks disinterested like he always does before a fight. He's eyeing up Imama. And then they just stare at each other. And I'm not talking for 1-2 seconds. I'm talking 20, 30 seconds where nothing happens. And it's almost embarrassing. They engage. Imama sprawls out and backs away and gets away from Reeves again. And they stare at each other again for another 15 to 20 seconds. Then Imama comes with the big right hand. He misses. And this is where I think Revo should be held at fault for this. And maybe he didn't want to fight. And it goes back to our codes of not embarrassing somebody, especially someone who's fighting, you know, Ryan Reeves, a guy, a heavy. He just holds his head down and smiles. You're embarrassing this kid. He's a young kid in the NHL. He's trying to make a name for himself. He's fighting Ryan Reeves. He wants to do well. And you're embarrassing him. It reeks of Reeves didn't want to fight. Don't you get that vibe? Because if Ryan was really engaged and he really wanted to fight that guy, he had him in a bad position. He could have threw an uppercut. He could have pushed him away fast and landed a right. He had him in a pretty vulnerable spot. But he just takes the route of, I'm too good for this. I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to laugh it off like you're a joke and you don't know what you're doing. Don't you think?
But isn't that pretty much what happened, though? I mean, maybe I see what you're saying, where you embarrassed a young kid, and not too long ago, Reeves was that young kid trying to make a name for himself and fight the heavies, and as he broke into the league. But that is what happened, and I feel like he responded appropriately.
Well, you're right. It is what happened, where Imama tried to knock him out with that right Superman punch, like really tried to hit him. But instead of laughing and throwing him in a headlock, why wouldn't Reeves start punching? Like, in my eyes, if anybody looks silly in this, it's Ryan Reeves, who didn't throw one punch. Stood there for a minute, and then the kid dove in to try to fight, and then Ryan grabs him and throws him in a headlock. Don't you think? I don't know. It just looks like Ryan didn't want to fight, and Imama wanted to fight, and then Ryan's embarrassing him by smiling. I'm like, why? Just fight him. Or just don't drop your gloves. Like, if you want to fight, fight. Don't then embarrass somebody. Like, you're too good to fight all of a sudden, or this guy's a joke because he tried to punch you. You're too good to fight. You're so tough. I don't know. I didn't like the whole thing.
So take us back to your, you know, entry into the NHL in Minnesota. And was Parros the fight that really put you on the map there?
I would say, yeah.
So think about how far into the season was that approximately? Like, was that like halfway through or something?
Well, I got called up midway through the season around Christmas. So that was about a month after that. So probably around January, February time.
Was there a time during that or in the preseason or in the AHL during that stretch where you were in a similar spot and like the heavies which wouldn't take you seriously or tried to embarrass you like that? Like, does that stuff happen?
No. And it just, the whole thing seemed just almost staged with the way they squared off. The only square off I can liken to that is with me and Bolduc from Vancouver, where he just kept backing up to center and I'm chasing him. Like, I'm trying to skate at him to get to him at center ice, but he's the one who took his bucket off and skated to center. It's almost a sideshow. It really gives a bad name to fighting. That whole thing I didn't like. It made me feel, I just didn't like it. It wasn't what an NHL hockey fight should be. To think back to the good old days with the Bruins or a team, I don't know how many teams you followed, but did you ever see something like that? Like this sideshow event where the person drops one glove, two glove, one elbow pad, two elbow pads, throws them aside, skates to center ice, like lines each other up. It was farcical. It was almost like you're writing a script to make fun of hockey fighting, right? Because hockey fighting is supposed to be in the moment. It's supposed to be passionate, especially at that case. Like, Ryan drills one of your defensemen. You're supposed to charge off the bench, grab him by the neck, and start throwing punches. You're not supposed to go up and tap him on the shin pads and go, let's fight, and then skate away. Like, there goes all of your advantage. I don't know. Dumb. It was a stupid move by Imama, and it was an embarrassing thing that Revo did. I didn't like any of it.
Whatever. Yeah, it's a good point, too.
Garbage fight.
Well, like, it was a garbage fight. When they do the theatrics like that and they're backing up and they're shedding their equipment and they're going to center ice, they almost always follow it up with like a good fight and a good show. Like, if you're going to put on that kind of, like, again, theatrics, then you got to follow it up. You know, and it's usually stuff you see in those smaller leagues, the AHL, the fighting leagues, where the guys just tear into each other the way that they don't really in the NHL anymore. So I think it was if this fight had happened in the moment without the theatrics, without the 30-second standoff and that last 10 seconds of just like trying to square off the big punch that missed and Reeves laughing, I don't think we'd be talking about it the same way we did because of the lead up to it.
See, I look at it a little bit differently where I'm looking at Imama and I'm like, are you really doing this for the team?
Yeah.
Is this really retribution for your defenseman getting hit? Or are you doing this for yourself? Because if you're really pissed off that your teammate got buried like that, you're firing in there and you're throwing punches. You're not going in, tapping them and backing up and just putting on the whole show and going to center ice. That's what I don't like. I just don't. And then I disagree with you with these senior league fights. They're all garbage. Go to the LNAH website, go to hockeyfights.com and watch those fights. For as much as the buildup that's there, there's never a good fight. And I watch those fights all the time. They're all garbage. The guys throw one or two punches and they just fall down. For them to be called like it's the toughest league in the world. These guys are all killers. They're all roided up. All they do is think about fighting. That's all they do. They work out for fighting. They're I'm going to swear I get so fired up. They're bad fighters. They're terrible fighters. Go watch any fights. They're just awful. And they fall down. And the idea of the fight is whoever gets up quickest and raises their hands and salutes the crowd. It's just so dumb. It's I don't like it. Anyways, I didn't like that fight. Go watch the Marcus Foligno fight when he fought scumbag Liam O'Brien and beat him up. That's a good fight. Moose buried that guy. Pseudo tough guy, Liam O'Brien. I don't really know. I don't like that guy. We had a run-in at St. John's at a bar. Long story, but he's a twerp. He's a little twerp. I almost beat him. Anyways,
John, all right. This is not a story you've ever told. I want to hear it now. I don't even know it.
Well, because it's just, it was just a night in St. John's. And it's just, we played his AHL team. I think it was the Hershey Bears or something. They came to St. John's. And I tried to tangle with him and it didn't happen. I saw him in the bar and he had like one of these tight shirts on. And I was in a pissy mood because I didn't want to be there and I wanted to be at home. And I went up to him. I can't remember what I said. Something to the like of, like, you better get out of here before I pound your face in. Something like that, And he just like, I don't know what happened. He left. But I was so mad at the kid. I'm like, because I think he stuck his tongue out at me in the game and he wouldn't fight me. And he gave me the tongue out in my face. And I'm like, and I think I went up to him. I was like, there's no cameras around. Are you going to have that same energy? Like, let's go. We'll step outside and figure this out. And he wouldn't do it. And his teammates were there. And I think I was all alone. I might've had one teammate with me. And that was that. But I just have no time for that garbage. I'm like, don't embarrass. And it was a case of embarrassing where it was a game. He got out of line. I said, let's go. You're the tough guy. Let's fight. And he stuck his tongue out. This might have been from the NHL. This might have been from the days of the show. I can't remember when it happened. And I tried to get at him and he wouldn't fight. And then the next time I saw him, I said, okay, cameras are gone. Let's go. It was in the bar. That's how mad I was at this kid for embarrassing me on the ice. And I said, let's go. And his whole team was there. I'm like, I don't care. You're not so tough now, are we? You and your tight t-shirt. I will beat your doors off in this bar, green sleeves, St. John's, Newfoundland. And he just said no. And I was like, fine. Like, you're not tough. You're not tough. And that was the end of it. So I don't know. I'm not proud of these moments, but they happen.
It's funny. Just
it is what it is.
It wasn't really that long ago, but it doesn't even seem like I know you've changed so much the last couple of years. I have a hard time thinking the John I know in 2023 would do anything like that at a bar.
I had a hard time separating on the ice and off the ice because when I played, I didn't like anybody. I really didn't. I made it my point to not really be friendly with anybody too much, even though I bounced around teams. You can ask the guys in Chicago. I got traded to the Rangers. The first game we played them, like a half a week later, I wanted to kill everybody. I was asking everybody to fight. And I think I buried Jamal Mayer's questionable hit. But anyways, it was, it was just wasn't my style. And those days are behind me. But you get, catch me in the wrong situation even today. You know, it never leaves you for good. It's always there. But yeah, Liam O'Brien, I don't like him. I don't like his style. But hey, he's still playing the show. So good for him, right, Tim?
Sure.
All right. Are we going to move on from this? Because I didn't even want to tell that story.
I know. There's a really good article that I read this morning that I want to touch on. And it's something that we've touched a lot on this show, but I haven't seen it like put so clearly now. It's an article from Daily Faceoff by Scott Maxwell, and it's called "Why Do UFA Contracts for Big Name Defensemen Age Poorly So Fast?" We have not been kind to the likes of Seth Jones on this show, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Erik Karlsson before this year. Even Darnell Nurse's name has come up. Drew Doughty's name has come up. And so he also mentions Colton Pareko. He mentions even Morgan Riley apparently is starting to be mixed in with that group where these defensemen sign huge contracts and almost immediately they're not worth it. And so I think it's really interesting. And he kind of lays out these five or six points that I think we should kind of break down because this is a problem. And a lot of it is under the team's control. A lot of it's situational. A lot of it's just fluke stuff. But I thought it would be fun to go down that list of why this happens. What do you think?
Well, yeah, because I personally don't agree with some of the things he's saying, and I have my own opinion, but yeah, let's go through it.
Okay, so the first one is the flat cap, and the examples he gives are Doughty and Karlsson, who signed $11 million contracts in 2018 and 2019 respectively, and then obviously COVID happens, the lockdown, the schedule's all mixed up, the shortened season, all that stuff, and all of a sudden they're way, way, way overpaid. And this is something like the next major defenseman contract for UFA was Alex Pietrangelo. But because of what had happened a couple of years prior, he's only signing for 8.8 instead of that $11 million that the other guys had signed. And so in retrospect, they look like such bad contracts, even though at the time, if the market had continued the way it was going to, it might have been looking better. So what do you think about that one?
Well, I think it's spot on.
Yeah,
the same thing happened for not the high end forwards. They're still getting their money, but the tier two forwards, I think, would have started to sneak up to that $10 million range. But I think you've seen a cap even on the tier two guys. Maybe they're falling around the $7-8 million range, whereas they would have continued to creep up. But it's just the nature of the beast, you know. I don't think those contracts were the cause of those guys not getting big money. I just think there's not enough money to go around, and a team's going to spend more money on a McDavid or a Matthews than an O'Reilly or a Nurse. So it doesn't mean they're less valuable. But yes, I agree with that point.
Okay, the next one is the aging curve. And this is really interesting. I hadn't heard this. When you think about a player's prime, most people would think around that 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. And I know if anything, it was getting a little bit older as we know more about medicine and nutrition and plyometrics and like all this stuff that keeps guys' bodies younger, more in shape, longer careers. But he argues that the aging curve is actually your prime is younger. A lot of players are playing their best hockey in that 22 to 26 range, aka approximately their first 4 or 5 years in the league, unless they're one of those teenagers that joined a high draft pick. But most guys are making their entry to the NHL around that point. And he basically gives a few examples of analysts and hockey metric websites that all give that 22 to 26, 22 to 25, 25, all that is the peak. So when you sign a defenseman, GMs tend to think of like, okay, we're going to sign a 28-year-old UFA to an 8-year deal, knowing that we're going to get his best peak the next 2 to 3 years. And then when a steady maybe decline after that, but he'll still be an elite defenseman at the end of this contract. And if he's not, we have to deal with that because that's what it takes to sign him. But yeah, he's arguing that you already missed their prime at that point. What do you think?
Well, I think that's why you're seeing these deals earlier. You're seeing Adam Fox and Kale McCarr. And well, I think the one who started it was Thomas Chabot maybe, but all of these deals getting done right after the entry-level contract, where in years past they would have another contract before they hit the cash in at 25, 26 years old. So maybe GMs are getting wise to this, but I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with your style of play. I think it has a lot to do with the team that you're on, the minutes that you're getting. I don't know. You look at an Erik Karlsson, he's having the best year of his career. He's 32, you know, and then Drew Doughty's 32 and he's not playing too great. I just think it has a lot to do with your environment. A defenseman that kind of goes against this is a Roman Josi. who, in my opinion, is getting better. He's 32 years old right now. I think he's played his best hockey the last 2-3 years. Whereas before, he was good, and maybe he's getting more time now with Ryan Ellis gone, with PK gone, with Shea Weber gone, and he's the guy now. But, you know, I agree with that, but there's caveats. Like, Dougie Hamilton's still really good. He's 32. Pietrangelo's really solid. He's 32. Dougie Hamilton's 29, excuse me.
But I was going to say, he's not 32.
He's 29, but there are, you know, like, Brent Burns is 37. Carlson's 32. He's produced at a 70-point pace his whole career. So there are outliers, but then for every one of those, you're like, okay, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, woof. Like, there's those guys who just bring down that average. So I agree the prime is getting younger just because players are more skilled. They develop quicker. They're doing more in juniors or college, and then they can step in and just produce right away. I don't think their prime is over by 26 by any means. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and he gives some compelling data, but I have a hard time buying into that one fully, too, just for those examples that you listed. The next one here...
Jared Spurgeon's 32. He never really came on the scene until he was late, like 28. Like, really, really kind of embraced the way he plays. He was always good, but I think we're getting the best Jared Spurgeon right now, and I liken him to a guy like Quinn Hughes in Vancouver, who is 22, has that high offensive upside. He is playing really good, but I don't think we've seen the best Quinn Hughes. I think he comes into his own when he learns how to play a full game. You know what I mean? Like, right now, I really think he's focusing on the offensive side. Spurgeon did that. I think Quinn Hughes, the best player, is still to come. So, all right, what's his next point?
Yeah, and you should go read this article. It's really great. The next one is the restricted / unrestricted free agency structure. And his point basically being is that the players have such little control for the first few years when they're on the ELC, and then they usually sign 1 or 2 year deal on an RFA system. So by the time they reach the UFA status, it's the first and sometimes the only time that they have to go and cash in. So they're maximizing their value. They're willing to hit the open market. They're not going to take a discount. And so they get paid a lot by someone that sometimes it's not worth it. But again, it's the only way that they can go out and get a number one defenseman is by giving them $10, $11 million. And so you see these albatross contracts. And so I feel like this one's probably a good point too. I know there's a lot of nuances and layered to that, but I thought that was another, what do you think?
Well, yeah, that goes without saying. I think that's normal. When there's a good player who is going to be a free agent, and he plays such a crucial position as a defenseman. We all know how valuable those are. It's like you got to pay him. You got to pay to play the game. And when you look at the recent Stanley Cup champions, what do they have in common? They all have a very, very, very good, if not the best defenseman on their roster. So many Conn Smythe winners are defensemen because they are so valuable. Last year, the Avalanche, they don't win it without Cale Makar. The year before that, Victor Hedman. I know they have an elite offense, but Victor Hedman was the guy. He won the Conn Smythe, for Pete's sake. St. Louis Blues, they had a great defense. Alex Pietrangelo was the guy. The Capitals, John Carlson turns the corner, and he's the guy. Chris Letang, the Blackhawks had Duncan Keith. The Kings had Doughty. Like, I know they have some great forwards, but the key to a Stanley Cup champion is a strong defense. I will stand by that to the day I die. So you need these guys. Like, they're so valuable. And if you're a coach, what are you going to do? Like, if you're the Edmonton Oilers GM, are you going to let Darnell Nurse walk? Who are you going to get to replace him? I know he has one of these contracts that are bad, but it's like, are you going to let him go for nothing? You have to sign him. It has to be done. And I know that they're bad contracts right now, but who are you going to get to fill his spot? You know, he eats up all these minutes, valuable minutes. He looks bad at times, but I don't know. And that this is the issue I have with this article, where he just states all the negative. And it's like, okay, for every bad contract there is on the back end, you listed them all. There's a Adam Fox. There's a Charlie McAvoy. There's a Roman Josi, a Dougie Hamilton, a Cale Makar, an Alex Pietrangelo, a Miro Heiskanen, a John Carlson, a Jacob Trouba, a Thomas Chabot, a Hedman, a Hughes, a Spurgeon, an Ekblad. They're all great deals. All of them. You pick these couple guys who are bad or have had bad seasons, and then you light them up. And it's like Drew Doughty, he's lighting up this contract. He gave these guys how many Stanley Cups, Tim? Two. They're not winning without a Drew Doughty. They're not. I know they had a Regeer, they had Scuderi, they had a good defense. They're not winning without a Drew Doughty. I'm telling you right now, I don't care who they had on the front end. They're not winning without him. So yeah, that you pay to play the game. You pay for those cups. It is what it is. Carlson, he's the best defenseman in the league. What are you going to do? If you're Ottawa, if you're San Jose, you want that guy on your team. So that's my only umbrage. Like you can pick and choose. Yes, I get it. These guys age really, really bad. But anyways, what's his next point?
The next one is more straightforward: injuries. Sometimes injuries happen. They're just not worth that contract anymore, where they're not unhealthy enough to be on the IR or LTIR, but they're healthy enough to play and they're not living up to their contract. So that one feels more straightforward.
Well, it's a very polarizing position too. Like you could be an injured forward and get by and not be that big of an impact. If you're a defenseman and you're injured, you're going to notice because you're going to be a liability on defense. You're going to get beat wide. And when you get beat, you get scored on. It's very, very rare when a forward loses his man and they score that forward is, you know, glaring like, oh no, it usually ends up as a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, but it's a tough position, especially a guy who's playing almost half the game. It's huge. It's like the quarterback in the NFL. You are the guy. There's so much pressure on you. It's, yeah, I don't like this article anymore. All right, what's the last one?
The last one here is that teams struggle to evaluate defensemen properly. And this is really interesting, too, because he talks about how, like, with forwards, it's much easier to evaluate. It's the offensive production, by and large. And you know, you go further and down the lineup, and you're looking for other things. But top-tier guys, it's the offensive output. Defensemen, it's a little bit different. So you can be a very, very good defenseman without putting up a lot of points. But he talks about the need for advanced metrics and even the eye test. Like, did he play a great game? He has, you know, a couple of block shots, couple of hits, no points, but he can be the best player on the ice if he's doing his job well. And so it's a lot of subjective analysis, which is really tricky. And this one sentence I'll read here says, the final reason we'll touch on may have the biggest overall impact on why they age so quickly. And that's because teams struggle to properly evaluate defensemen. So the contract ages poorly because it was never a good one to begin with. What do you think on that?
I don't know. I guess there's a broad range of what is a good defenseman these days. And I look at your Boston Bruins. Who's their most important defenseman?
McAvoy.
I would argue Hampus Lindholm.
No, you can't.
Why?
he's not as important in any factor you want to name.
Defensively?
McAvoy's better.
You think so? Who gets more minutes per game, do you think?
I'm assuming McAvoy. I don't have it in front of me.
No, it's Hampus Lindholm. Why would Hampus Lindholm play more?
Where are you getting that data? You don't even have it in front of you. Just
NHL.com. Hampus Lindholm averages 23.19. Charlie McAvoy averages 22.36. So almost a full minute more.
Okay.
What's I'm just point? Saying, there's a reason Hampus Lindholm has played more. It's difficult to value defensemen. 7 years ago, Mark-Edward Vlasic was viewed as the best defenseman in the NHL. He didn't put up any points. He was one of the most underrated guys to ever play multiple defensive Olympic teams. Defensemen. They're all a defenseman. Let's just say they're all defensive. They do different things. But at the end of the day, a lot of people would take Mark-Edward Vlasic over Drew Doughty just because he was so good defensively. He could just glue on that guy, and that guy would not score. He'd say, go take care of McDavid, and he would. Now his contract looks terrible, but it's just, I don't know. There's a reason these guys get paid a lot of money. It's not because they're junk. It's because they're worth it. And yes, they age badly. It looks bad. I get it. We can all talk about it, but these are elite defensemen, and they're at such a polarizing position that when they go south, it goes south in a bad way. You know what I mean? You can hide. You can hide behind a power play or a second line winger role and just shift your attention elsewhere. If you're a high end forward, if you're a defenseman, once it goes south, you're done. I look like a Chara. When he started to go south, it went sad. Like he just looked like a turnstile. He just kept getting beat wide, and he didn't look like the same player who was so dominant for 15 years. I don't know. But then you get a player like Tyler Seguin. You just put him on the wing and let him shoot, and you can still put up 50 points, but he's not the same player he was when he was 22, but he's still productive. It's just a different position, obviously, but it's such a valuable position on the back end where you can't play unless you can move.
Well, isn't Giordano another great exception? Because he played his best season at age like 34, 35, 36. When did he win his Norris Trophy? Was it 35? Something like that. Like, it was pretty old. Yeah, it goes both ways.
But there are more bad contracts for defensemen just based on that fact, because when it goes south fast, where you don't see a lot of bad contracts with forwards just because you can hide them. They can be more productive. So I'll give this article that. When you look at the forwards, the top 25, 30 contracts, there's not many that stand out like, ugh, that's bad. Whereas when you look at the defensemen, it's like, oof, not good. Carlson, Doughty, Seth Jones, oof. Ekman Larson, you go down the list, it's like, gosh, they get worse and worse. So Vlasic, a Seabrook, even a McDonough now, he's not playing to his, you know, where he used to be his standard. So good article, very interesting, but it won't change anything. It's not going to change how GMs value that position just because it's so important. So important to have a very, very, very good defenseman to calm everything down and to play 30 minutes a game, for Pete's sake. They play half the game. That's huge. There's no forward who does that. And they play such a crucial position. Say that five times fast. Tough. All right, Tim. Are we done with this?
We are. We can be. What do you want to talk about next?
Let's move on. Let's do some quick hits, some fun stuff. And then I want to recap the standings and then maybe have top three, bottom three, because we haven't done that in a while. It's about a week and a half past the trade deadline. Teams are trying to figure out where these guys fit in, how much of an impact they've had. We haven't had a top three and a bottom three in a long time. So we'll finish with that. Obviously, everyone knows who the top one is, the Bruins. No brainer. I'm interested to know who your next two are, but let's just go through some quick hits here.
Cool. Yeah. So Pittsburgh Penguins' Nick Bonino is week to week with a lacerated kidney. Apparently he took a shot to the rib cage or something like that, and it was impactful enough that it lacerated this kidney, which is kind of crazy. Not a common hockey injury you hear too often.
Where's your kidney? Is that to the left of your belly button?
I don't know.
Probably. To the right of your belly button?
That sounds right, but I don't know.
That's a tough one. I felt hard in last night's hockey game. Some guy got a stick between my legs, and I expected him to just take it out because I was flying. I was going pretty fast, and usually you do the courtesy thing and just pull the stick away. He didn't do it. I like fell so hard. My hands were handcuffed, so I just fell on my. It was like a plank going straight forward. It hurt. I was like, "Come on, man, what are you doing here?" No penalty either. All right, moving on.
Yeah, the Boston clinched a playoff spot over the weekend, the first team to do so. And I think they just missed the window to be the quickest team to reach 50 wins, but still really good. They split with the Red Wings over the weekend.
Red Wings, won,
yesterday's game. They always play the Bruins well. They played them well in the first game, too. But yeah, it's the next domino to fall there. And Rasmus Sandin, you wanted to touch on him. What's he been doing?
Well, he's been on fire ever since he was dealt from Toronto unceremoniously at the deadline for first rounder and Erik Gustafsson. Dubas gave up on him. Basically, you have the stud defenseman. He held out in training camp because he wanted a certain number. He wanted Liljegren type numbers, and he gave it to him, but then he just never gave him an opportunity in another lineup. Just didn't really find a good footing in Toronto. Very skilled, very good defenseman. I said at the time of the trade, this was a huge mistake by Kyle Dubas. Out of all the great moves that he made, this one's going to sting because it's going to end up being like a Sergachev's type thing where you're going to see him. He's going to flourish. Lo and behold, goes to Washington. John Carlson's been out. He's having a fantastic start. He's played four games, 2 points a game, one goal, seven assists, playing fantastic. I know it's an early sample size, but boy, oh boy, this one's going to sting for the Maple Leafs in a few years. And you look over there and it's like, all-star puck moving defenseman can eat up 30 minutes and we're sitting here icing these schlubs, and they're not schlubs. I get it, but he's a prototypical defenseman you want in today's game. And they just gave him away for Erik Gustafsson and what is essentially a second rounder because it was Boston's first round pick, which is going to be the 32nd pick overall. Cause the Bruins are probably going to win the Stanley Cup. So one of the few missteps by Kyle Dubas, Sandin's playing great. All right. Another thing I wanted to touch on. Gary Bettman is embroiled in litigation. Well, the NHL is right now with Steve Monitor's family. Steve Monitor's family is suing the NHL for negligence on how they handled his injuries, the CTE to be the main one. I don't know what CTE stands for. It's a head injury. Steve's family is arguing that he sustained it in the NHL. The NHL didn't take it serious. They didn't really do anything to help him. They just kept sending him out there. And the NHL made a statement. It was Gary Bettman. They said, quote, he was defending Steve Monador's wrongful death suit. The NHL says he was educated by the NHLPA reps and CTE about CTE and potential long-term risks of head injuries. End quote. I was the rep in Chicago when Steve was getting his serious head injuries. I was the rep for that team. I was never missed a meeting. I was on every single call. I went to every off-season meeting. Never, ever, ever, ever were we told to tell our team about CTE. Not once. This is a bold-faced lie from Gary Bettman. He's a dirtbag for saying this. He's changing his tune. Always he denied that there was any link between CTE and hockey and this and that. Now all of a sudden, information's coming out and it's like, well, yeah, everybody has CTE. It's a physical sport. Now he's changing his tune, saying, oh, we told the players. We told the reps to tell the players. It's a lie. I was the rep for that Chicago Blackhawks team. That was me. He's talking about me. It's a lie. I was Steve Monitor's teammate. Never once was I told from the NHL for anybody associated with them to say, hey, give your players a heads up about CTE. And if I was, how stupid is that? You got to leave it up to NHLPA reps. And I wasn't. But his argument is even stupid in that regard, where it's like, oh, you know what? We took care of it. We told the reps to tell the players. So we had all our bases covered. Are you nuts? I hope he loses everything. I hope he gets fired. I hope he gets sent to jail. It's a bold-faced lie for him to say this. It's so incredibly two-faced. He's switching his tune because he knows it's not going his way. It's awful. I hope Steve Monitor's family takes him to the cleaners. What they did to him is terrible. He was a good hockey player who just wanted to get on the ice, and they cleared him to play, and that was it. And they didn't take care of him after, and now he's dead. So shame on you, Gary Bettman. You're a disgusting, disgusting person for saying this. So I don't know. That's all I wanted to say. I just saw that and my stomach turned. I'm like, are you? And then I had to think. I was like, was I the rep? I was like, yeah, I was the rep for that team. It's just, it's a bold-faced lie. He's lying to you, the fan. He's lying to everybody. He's a gross person, that guy. He's a weasel. I've said it forever. I don't like him. I don't like him at all. Anyways, that's my rant.
Is his power and control so strong that players and teams and retired athletes and everyone else won't come after him and won't say these sort of things? Because they
no idea. He got me traded and sent to the AHL, so he obviously has a lot of pull in the game. He's the commissioner of the NHL. Obviously, he has a lot of power, but it's just it's wrong. It's wrong. He's lying to everybody. I hope he gets called out on this. Bring me to Canada to go. I'll testify. I was the rep for the team. Never once did they say, hey, you know what? Tell your players about this. And no, it's a lie. It's so bad. It's so incredibly bad. So I just wanted to say that and get my stuff on record, because it's not right what he's doing.
Was he with the team at that time, the Blackhawks?
Monty, yeah. Yeah, I knew him very well. He was because he's dead because of not Bettman didn't kill him, but he didn't help. He was a great man. Like, he really was. Obviously, he had his demons, but boy, oh boy. Like, I remember running into him post-career at some events, and he was doing great. And then he just kind of, you know, life happens and now he's gone. So, and for Bettman to say this, it's just, I feel bad for his family, because the guy obviously had head injuries. I was there many, like, he had a couple bad ones in Chicago where he just got lit up. And I was like, Monty, what is happening? I'm like, you should not be playing. And then he gets cleared and he's back on the ice. So I don't know. It's gross. And then I see Bettman saying stuff like that. It should not be okay. like you said, people need to say something. People more powerful than me need to say something, because what he's saying is not okay. He is not telling the truth. He's bold-faced lying to everybody involved in this situation. What are you going to do? And I know CTE is a thing. And here's the thing. And I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. I have my opinions. So I'll just leave it for another show maybe, or for another time. This isn't appropriate to talk about, but he's lying. That's all there is to it. All right. What else are we talking about? Top three, bottom three?
Yeah, the standings update and where we can you
can you go from that to that? It's just He's just such a slimy jerk. You know what I mean? He's just so incredibly slimy. I've had dealings with him probably more than most people, just because of the whole All-Star Game fiasco. When I was a rep, I was on the negotiating committee. So I've had dealings with this guy. Like I have had personal conversations with him. And every time he's like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, where it's just like, you just look at him, you're like, oh, gross.
So
you're before, gross.
Before the All-Star Game, did you already not like or respect Bettman, like the reputation kind of around the league like that? And then you were sort of like, while the rumors are true, what was the difference?
I respected how he negotiated because he was super smart. You know, he had an agenda when he came into the 2014 season when we got locked out, or was it 15? I can't remember.
13.
Maybe even before that, 13. So he knew what he wanted. He got it. And I saw it the whole time. I tried telling everybody, like, he's going to want this, this, and this, and he's trying to push us, and he's asking for a mile, knowing we're going to give him a half a mile at the end. So let's not even just offer, like, but he got it. And so I respected him as a negotiator because he was great. He nailed it. He got everything he wanted. I didn't respect how he treated the players. I didn't respect how he treated people. He thinks everyone's beneath him. He's just a weasel, man. Like, that's what he is. And then this, he knows he's backed into a corner, so he's switching his stance. He's just going against everything he said. And I don't know how a person can do that. You've said something for years, and then to be able to just switch on a drop of a coin and say, no, I mean this now. It just means you're not a genuine person. You have no backbone, and you just go the way the wind blows. It's like, okay, everybody's going this way now. Yeah, this is where I stand. I don't respect you. You're at all. You're just a gross person. Like, no backbone. I wouldn't trust him with anything. He's just a weasel. I wish I was more eloquently word-wise to say how I feel about him, but he's just a gross weasel. Gollum is a perfect thing. He's just like slimy. When I met with him and sat down with him, like, you're so weird. You're so uncomfortable. He makes me uncomfortable. And I'm usually very unflappable. When I sit down with him, I'm like, ugh. Like, just weird, man. All right. My top three teams, I think. I'm sorry. How often do I go on a Bettman rant? It's just bi-weekly, every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Something like that.
And by the way, staying on that train of thought, there was a poor kid in Arizona who did like the rookie lap. Did you see that?
No.
After the deadline, rookies get their chances because there's open roster spots. Obviously, Arizona didn't acquire anybody other than hurt players or, you know, players who are on the retired list. So they're calling up a lot of young kids. This kid gets his first NHL lap, and the Arizona Coyotes make a big deal out of it. They post it on their social media. It's like, oh, this guy's getting his first lap. You know, congrats. Nobody's in the arena. Nobody. There might have been 12 people in the whole arena, and nobody's saying anything. They introduce the kid. They do the big coyote howl. Nobody's clapping. Nobody's cheering. It's so pathetic. I felt bad for this kid. Like, he's going to look back at this video. Oh, my first NHL game. How incredible. Nobody saw it. And the NHL, like, they pumped it up. They put the video out. I'm like, you're really not doing a good job on your social media team. So it was just funny. Try to find it if you haven't seen it. But it's just team in Arizona, really. Really working out great. All right. My top three teams. The Bruins are obviously a number one. No brainer, right, Tim?
Correct.
I think they're playing great. They are the team to beat. They will have to just really implode if they don't win the Stanley Cup this year. It's theirs to lose. They're plus 103 in goal differential. What they're doing is insane. It hasn't been seen ever, ever. My second team is actually quite surprising. It's from the Pacific Division. The Vegas Golden Knights are playing really good hockey, Tim. They are coming on at the right time. They picked up Jonathan Quick. He's playing good. A lot of players that I don't even know who they are playing really, really well. So the Vegas Golden Knights are my second team. I like the way they're playing. I think Eichel's going to have a good playoffs. I don't think Colorado is the same team as they were last year. I really don't. They're the second wild card team right now. 1 minute, I think they're taking the next step. And then they lose two or three games in a row. I'm like, who are they? You know, I know they're playing well of late. I think they've won 6 or 7 of the last 10. I don't trust Colorado come playoff time. I think Vegas is playing great. I love their lineup. I think Jonathan Quick will be their starter come playoff time. I like their defense. I kind of like everything about this team. So they're my second team. Surprisingly, I know. Very, very surprising. My third team, I go back and forth. I like Carolina a lot. I don't like what they did at the deadline. Toronto, I don't really trust them. I'm back on the New Jersey Devils train. I was off of it for a lot of it. They're my third place team. They pick up Timo Meier. They're playing incredible hockey. They seem to have balanced out their offensive output. They're playing really good defense. The thing I love about them, they are the best road team in the NHL. They have the best record. They're 25-4-4 on the road. And in the playoffs, when does the series start, Tim?
When a team loses at home.
Boom. Devils are incredible on the road. Absolutely incredible. I see them being a very, very hard out in the Eastern Conference. If the Bruins and Devils meet up in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's going to be a heck of a series. So that's my three. I got Boston, I got Vegas, and I got the Devils. There you go.
That's really good. And I actually had a very similar list. Boston, obviously. I skipped over Carolina because for the similar reason, and all the other teams in the East got not just a little bit better, but a lot better. And Carolina did nothing. They had Gostisbehere, who makes $4.5 million. So I know that ate into their plans, but all the other teams got a lot better. You lose Pacioretty and you don't replace them. I know they played the whole season without him, but that was a big addition that you were banking on all year. And then you did nothing when that option went away. So, they're still an elite team. They're going to win a couple of playoff rounds, but I think they fall out of the top three for me. So I would also go to New Jersey as my number two. And my third pick, and I'm going to jump down to number 9 in the standings and across the entire league, Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't care what happens in the regular season, and they're playing really well, but this team in the playoffs is still a team that nobody wants to face. I don't care where they are in the standings. They're so good. You see Kucherov's fake slap pass the other day?
He's a good player. I've heard of
him. Yeah, it was pretty special. So those are the top three for me.
Even with Stamkos potentially, you know, being out with his knee injury, he got hurt the other day. You still like him?
Yeah, I do. I
mean, Hedman's out. You still like him?
Kucherov, Hedman, Point. Yeah, like they're just so good. Vasilevsky's still an elite goaltender, and they're my number three team.
I get nervous trying to pick them with the injuries that they've been piling up. It just makes me nervous. It makes me a little nervous. I know Hedman's back, but
you're a nervous person, John. You're a nervous guy.
I am. It's getting close to playoffs. Sorry, the bottom three. Now, this one's tricky because I really don't like any of these teams, but I'm just going to play it straight. My least favorite team, I should say, because it is just a popularity contest at this point. The interesting thing is, these teams have been playing okay on the bottom of the standings. Like, they've been winning some games. They've been competitive. But my worst team in the NHL at this point right now is the Philadelphia Flyers. I think they're the worst. They've been playing the worst hockey. They, like, at least Arizona's been competing. Excuse me. they've been a hard out. You know, I think they beat Minnesota last night. So they've been playing some pretty good hockey. The Flyers are just hot garbage. Nobody wants to be there. Everybody's on the injured reserve. They're just bad. They're my worst team in the league right now. Right behind them, a close second, is the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody's hurt, Tim. You posted a graphic on our agenda. We didn't get to it, but the amount of players that are hurt for the Montreal Canadiens, by design, potentially, going for Connor Bedard, but you got Price, Biron, Monahan, Gallagher, Evans, Slakovsky, Caulfield, Arbor Shea, Kirby Doc, Armia, Barron, and Goulet. That's a whole team. That's a whole team out of the lineup. And I don't know, maybe most of them are hurt. Maybe some of them, maybe they're just keeping out, but they're my second worst team in the NHL. My third worst team, it's tough. It's tough. You got to go with the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're dead last for what they did this offseason. Pseudo making a run for it, bringing in Johnny Gaudreau, signing. Who'd they sign on the back end to like a $4 million contract? Was that Goodbranson? Signing Goodbranson, re-signing Patrick Laine. They're having a terrible season. They're minus 75 in goal differential. They're just playing bad hockey. So that's my three. Who do you got, Tim?
Yeah, that's a good list. I'm going to start with the San Jose Sharks. It is now March 13th, and the Sharks have 6 wins at home in San Jose. 6. It's really bad. They're 31 out of 32 in terms of points. They've got 50 points. They're getting lapped by the top teams in the league, and it's too bad. And we kind of saw this coming. I thought maybe they would shake loose of a couple contracts, but they didn't. So they're at the bottom for me right now. The next would be the Anaheim Ducks. They are minus 99 in goal differential. So basically over 200 goal difference from what Boston's doing to what they're doing, which is just hard to fathom, especially when you consider last year when they weren't quite in like that edging on a playoff spot, but they were like, okay, this is a franchise that has taken a step with Zegras, with Drysdale, with all those young players all coming up together. And they just, what's his name? Not McIntosh. What's the kid's name? That, Mac and something.
What are you talking about?
That young stud they have on the forward, American kid. I forget his name. Anyway, they're
nice. We're killing it.
Yeah. But they have not played well. And then third is Columbus.
Well, I feel bad for John Gibson. That's who I feel bad for. I feel like it's Mason McTavish you're talking about.
Yes, McTavish. Yeah, McIntosh. Yeah. I was close.
It's an apple. I think John Gibson is playing fantastic. That's why I feel bad. You're wasting this guy's career. He is such a good goalie. Every night he sees 48 to 50 shots, and he's just being worn down on this bad team. Isaac Lundstrom, I don't know what happened to you.
John, he's letting in almost
played so good last year.
4 goals a game.
Yeah, because he gets 50 shots, Tim, and so many grade A chances. Look into the deeper stats. He's been playing fantastic hockey. And I feel bad for him. He's got nobody to play defense. I don't know what's happening with him. A promising last year has turned into just a debacle this year. I don't know where this team goes from here. I really don't. All right. You're saying the Columbus Blue Jackets is your last one?
Yeah. And I go back and forth on this one too. Like, what's the best landing spot for Bedard? And that could be a whole discussion someday. We get closer to the summer, but they're probably going to lead that charge there. And I like Columbus. I like the city, but the team has really very little to be excited about right now.
I agree. They're very, very bad. You know, it wasn't bad this podcast. I think we killed it. Thank you everybody for listening. It was fantastic. Send it to Gary Bettman. If you can add him, that'd be fantastic just so we can listen to it. I really want him to hear this. I hope everybody has a good Monday. We will be here on Wednesday to chat again. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.